Pants in the Boot, a show that tries to unite English speakers by dividing them across large bodies of water. I'm your host, Glenn Fleischman, here in Seattle, Washington, and joining me today, well, I brought in some ringers. You'll know James Thompson, who's in Glasgow, Scotland. Hello, James.
A pleasure to be back.
Kathy Campbell in the Republic of Portland in Oregon. Hello, Kathy.
Hello, Glenn.
But I've also brought in ringers Chris Finn, who is in Broughty Ferry, Scotland. Hello, Chris. Welcome to the podcast.
Nobody knows where that is. On the East Coast, near Dundee.
Oh, sure. Hello. Use a big city name. And then also Alice Fraser, who is currently in Edinburgh in Scotland at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival and is originally from Sydney, Australia. Hello, Alice.
Hello. How are you?
Excellent. And I want to plug, Alice has things to plug. Unlike the rest of us who are thingy doers without pluggings, you can find Alice Fraser is a performer, a comedian, a writer, a podcaster, and you can find her at patreon.com/AliceFraser. That's F-R-A-S-E-R, the proper spelling of Fraser, as we know. Well, so on this episode, we're doing the first of several in a run, so you hear these voices over and over again for the next few. We're starting with the contentious topic of fancy dress and formal dress. As an American, I thought I knew what formal wear was. And then I start watching British television and I seem to have no idea. Folks outside the UK, what do you call, what is formal dress? What is fancy dress? This is very confusing.
For me, I would have said fancy dress is dressing up like for Halloween, that sort of level of fancy dress. Like I'm dressing up as Batman, which was what I did when I was 7. Formal dress would be you are attending a wedding or some other occasion and you are going to wear a suit or something. I mean, formal dress, I don't know, would I say that for a kilt? I guess I would, yeah.
I know that definitely it is a contentious phrase, though, because my wife had a colleague who from America who arrived in the UK for a party, and it was a fancy dress party. She showed up in an evening ball gown with elbow-length gloves, but it meant, as everybody else was, you know, mummies and witches and stuff. And so you could pull that off, couldn't you? You know, I'd come as a socialite or something, but yeah, she was deeply embarrassed by that situation.
I mean, I think it's worse if you do it the other way around.
Yeah. Great minds.
The party which everyone comes as Babadook, right? And you've come in fancy dress. No, you've come in a formal dress. Well, so in the U.S., it's kind of funny because we are very bad at dressing anything above casual. I don't know if this is correct.
Well, hold on now, Glenn. I feel like that is more of a West Coast thing. From what I understand, people that live in other parts of the world or the United States tend to have more of a style than us lovely Pacific Northwesterners. But yes, we are like casual, sweet, and formal. Awesome. I will wear heels with my cargo pants.
But part of that comes from the fact that, of course, in America, it was ostensibly at least a de-classed society. There was supposed to be no striations of class in the US. And so in the UK, we still have, if you get an invitation to a moderately formal event, there will be a dress code on there, and it may say black tie, or it may say white tie, even if it's a particularly formal occasion. So there are still those gradations here in the UK, which don't always translate outside this hidebound, classbound, terrifying culture we have.
Yeah, I mean, in some cases, it might just be, I will wear a shirt. Which is like, I mean, I'm making an effort.
Well, you are
buttoned up shirt, as we call it in Australia.
Wait, button up shirt. See, in America, only women button up shirts, only men button down shirts. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know, but there is a thing about there is the directions left and right. That's what I'm confused about, right?
The buttons side. They still go up and down.
For us in Australia, we would say fancy dress for a costume party. Where you're dressing up as something that you're not. It's like a trans... I guess the assumed etymology is like fanciful dress. And then we wouldn't say formal dress. We would say formal wear.
Formal attire, possibly.
Yeah.
See, and we get in this thing where I think weddings are particularly... Weddings are practically the only time in which you're asked to dress something other than, say, I mean, you'll get business casual, you'll get black tie, you'll get white tie, you'll get fancy. We have a lot of things in America that nobody knows. I will get an invitation and I will consult my wife, who is more etiquette knowledge than I do. And then we will sometimes consult online and usually send an email and like, can we wear, do I need to rent tails for this? I once owned tails. And I no longer do, but is it more typical in your respective lands that you might have an opportunity in your life to be invited to something in which women are required to wear, you know, or asked to wear formal evening wear, and you may have to wear something like tails, not a top hat necessarily, but tails?
Well, when I, in Australia, there are a few, we sort of take our cue from the British there, but the most dress codes I've ever been asked to adhere to in a short period of time was my period of time in Cambridge, where you have academic formal. You had, when our graduation came around, there was a list of literally the kinds of colors and lengths and styles you were allowed to wear, the types of heel, the type of hairstyle, all of that. So for the formal graduation, that was very strict for women, in a way that sort of men's formal attire tends to be very limited, and women's formal attire can be more broad. But for this particular event, the graduation, you were told exactly what to wear. And I assume that's from when women graduating was an unusual event, and everyone was worried that they'd scandalize the neighborhood with their
by being educated. Like, that's scandalous enough on its own. Yeah,
I can give you a graduation story from last week. Like, for graduations, certainly at Glasgow University, which is my university, everyone would be wearing a gown, which is kind of just like a sort of cape, and they were sort of color-coded and various things. And you would typically rent that. And the graduations happen at certain times of the year. And we were taking somebody, a tourist friend, around showing them the university. And there were a number of people in graduation gowns, and I was like, the graduations aren't happening. You know, they were earlier in the year and there's some later in the year. I don't quite recognize the graduation gown that they're wearing. And I looked at them for a little while, and then I noticed the Hogwarts logo on their gowns. And I was like, ah, they're tourists, because our university looks very Hogwartsian. Yes, people had come for a photo shoot wearing their Hogwarts gowns. And I was like, ah. It all makes sense now.
So that's fancy dress purporting to be academic dress.
Exactly. That was what I was going for. Ooh, as a crossover between the two.
That's amazing.
I think this is one of those examples where the differences are diminishing between the various countries, because actually we're losing a lot of these very fixed and formal ideas, these gradations of formality. And I suspect that for most of us, we would have a fairly, you know, comfortable idea of what formal dress would be, and most certainly the men in the group would reach into their wardrobe and pull out a suit, probably a lounge suit, an evening suit, or maybe a kilt for James and I. And yeah, the women, where once you might have had ball gowns, you'll have, you know, a little palette of dresses you can choose from, or you might use it as used to buy something new. But I think there's not the same formality around it as there once was.
Which isn't such a shame, except when I remember this in the period after my mother's death, I felt sad that there weren't these kind of formal structures for what to wear and when to wear it.
Did you inherit from the UK as well that idea of the Victorian thing of you wear black for, I was going to say a year, but that's not long enough, is it? And then you wore violet, I think, didn't you? And then, you know, so there was that sort of codified structure.
Yeah, mourning and then half mourning and then a black band. And it was not just the colours of clothes, but the fabric that you were allowed to wear and the jewellery that you were or weren't allowed to wear at various periods. So people could, and this was the thing that I felt a lack of, was that people could look at you and you wouldn't have to explain.
Oh, my.
You know, that they would know how, I kind of wished for that public symbol or signal that I was a year into mourning, or that I was 6 months into mourning, or, you know, that I still had this grief over me, because it would have saved a lot of explanations.
I want that for everything. Now that you say that, I had cancer 20 years ago and I'm totally cured of it. But there are times you're like, I don't want to talk about cancer anymore. Could I wear a color that indicated I have cancer and I just don't want to talk about it? Probably not. So good.
There's flower symbols in Pacific Island nations where, you know, they tell you whether you're single or not. And, you know, if you're out of the bar, that would be handy.